Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program from Bonn, Germany, this Tuesday, the 27th of December, 2016. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura from the social media desk.
In today's program, the Nigerian army recovers the Sambisa forest that was a major stronghold for the Boko Haram militants and says it will turn into a training center for its troops.
That is a very important milestone to root out insurgency. And by getting Sambisa forest, the insurgency has been broken down over 80%.
The situation in the DRC's town of Beni in the east of the country remains dire after Christmas attacks left at least 35 people dead. We hear from a resident of the town.
The situation is very bad. People are fearing of what can come in next time.
And on the social media front, we will be looking at what many of you have been saying on Twitter and Facebook regarding what's happening in Africa's hotspots.
That's right, but just stay with us for all this and much more. But let's listen to what is happening around the world first.
I'm Christina Kripal with the DW News. 75 years after the attack on the U.S. Navy's Pacific headquarters Pearl Harbor in Hawaii, U.S. President Barack Obama and Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe will jointly honor the victims at the official memorial on Oahu today. It is the first homage on the site paid to the 2,400 American victims by a Japanese leader. Prime Minister Abe explained his motivation.
I'm very much looking forward to sending out a strong message about the value of reconciliation, as well as our sincere prayers for those who died in the war.
Romania's President Klaus Iohannis on Tuesday rejected the leftist Social Democrat Party's nominee for prime minister. The PSD had proposed Sevil Shaideh, a 52-year-old Muslim woman. She's a close associate of PSD power broker Liviu Dragnea, who was ruled out of the job due to a conviction in a referendum rigging case. She's also a member of the 1% Muslim minority in the predominantly Catholic country. The Russian Defense Ministry said on Tuesday that it has recovered the black box of the military plane, which crashed into the Black Sea over the weekend. The plane crashed shortly after takeoff on Sunday, killing all 92 people abroad. Most of the passengers were members of a well-known military band, the Alexandrov Ensemble. They were set to perform for Russian troops in Syria, the flight's destination. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. In Mozambique, President Filipe Nyusi and the leader of the main opposition party, Afonso Dhlakama, today announced a 7-day ceasefire until January the 4th. Renamos Dhlakama and Nyusi talked on the phone on Monday, raising new hopes for an end to the armed conflict in the former Portuguese colony, said the head of state.
After the call, I felt encouraged that what we've been saying all along will come true. Hostilities must cease. Nobody should die because of differing ideas and convictions.
Peace negotiations for the long-running conflict in Mozambique, which led the Renamo to take up arms again about a year ago, stalled in December, causing international mediators to abandon the country. Somalia on Tuesday swore in new lawmakers after weeks of voting in a complex political process. While the election was seen as flawed, it is also considered the most democratic in nearly five decades. The new parliament was inaugurated under tight security in Mogadishu 2 months after voting began. Lawmakers are now expected to elect the president by a secret ballot, but no date has been set. The vote for president has been put off several times as a result of delays in the election of lawmakers due to clan disputes and accusations of fraud. President Denis Sassou of the Republic of Congo is set to meet with President-elect Donald Trump in the United States today to discuss the ongoing political crisis in Libya and other African issues. The meeting was announced on social media by Sassou spokesman Thierry Mungala. No further details were given about what would be the first meeting between the president-elect and an African leader. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Christina Kripal.
We begin the program in Nigeria, where the military has said it will turn the Sambisa Forest, a former bastion of the militant Islamist group Boko Haram, into a training center for its troops. This move, according to the army, would prevent the militants from rebuilding a presence in the area. The military overran the militants' last camp in Sambisa, dubbed Camp Zero, over the weekend, and it had become their main base after they lost control of urban strongholds in northeastern Borno State in 2015. Many of the militants are thought to have fled to areas closer to the border with Niger and Chad before the camp fell. From Nigeria, Obale Musa reports.
The announcement that the military captured Camp Zero, the purported headquarters of Boko Haram in the Sambisa forest, was welcome news in most of Nigeria. The restoration of security in the northeastern part of the country was among the top priorities for President Muhammadu Buhari since he took office in May 2015. Many politicians of the ruling All Progressive Congress felt that the news was cause for celebration. Isatafide Mafindi is a national official in the party.
That is a very important milestone in pursuit of the promise made by Mr. President during his political campaign to root out insurgency, bring back peace to Nigeria, and fight corruption, create employment. And by getting Sambisa forests and allied areas right to the federal government, the insurgency has been broken down over 80%. The remaining 20% is mopping up and re-educating the people involved.
While the mood is high in the capital, Abuja, very little is known on the fate of the top leaders of the Boko Haram, including its spiritual leader, Abubakar Shekau. In the past, Nigeria experienced circumstances when enemies of the state who were thought to have gone for good resurfaced to wreak more havoc on the civilian populace. After government forces killed Mohamed Marwa, an Islamic militant who was active in the same part of Nigeria as Boko Haram in 1980, riots broke out and continued for 5 years after his death. Thousands were reported killed or displaced. Dr. Hussein Tukur Hassan, a social commentator in Abuja, insists that military powers cannot fully defeat ideological beliefs like those Boko Haram is built upon.
Somebody who has a strange ideology always see the prevalence of his ideology as a success. So no matter the price. And that's why you see Boko Haram and other, especially terrorists, going to the market, into the mosque, into churches and elsewhere and blew themselves up. That is an ultimate success for them. So those people who have those strange ideas can only not be conquered by military power. After all, their war is not conventional.
Nigerians are hopeful that the capture of Camp Zero is a significant step towards ending the insurgency which has taken the life of an estimated 20,000 people and displaced almost 2 million from the northeastern part of the country. While the majority of Boko Haram fighters are thought to be in Nigeria, they are also active in neighboring Cameroon and Niger. A suspected Boko Haram suicide bomber killed 2 people in Cameroon on Sunday.
Obale Musa reporting from Abuja, Nigeria. Wanjiku, what are people saying about this story? It must be training, of course, isn't it?
Indeed it is, but I'll just read a few comments for now. Yeboah Isaac Newton says, if it's really true, then he deserves applause because Boko Haram has tormented Nigeria for so many years now and hundreds have lost their lives and many more have been displaced. Nicholas Domanumbu is skeptical and asks, where and when is this Nollywood movie premiering? Better still, where can I get a copy?
I think he was trying to be ironical, if not sarcastic. Anyway, continue commenting on this story and we will read some of your comments when we can. Now, Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe traveled to Hawaii's Pearl Harbor, the site of a sneak attack by his country that provoked America into entering World War II, to reinforce what the leader calls the power of reconciliation. Abe, who will be hosted by US President Barack Obama, would be the first Japanese premier to visit the wreckage of the USS Arizona, which lost 1,100 crew members to the Japanese attack 75 years ago. Japanese warplanes, just remind you, also sank much of the US fleet, leaving a total of 2,400 sailors and Marines dead. Ole Tangen Jr. has more details to this story.
The attack took the United States of America by complete surprise. On the morning of December 7, 1941, the Japanese Air Force bombed the U.S. Navy Pacific headquarters at Pearl Harbor, located on the Hawaiian island of Oahu. 2,300 Americans lost their lives and numerous ships were sunk. the attack drew the United States into World War II. Shinzo Abe will be the first Japanese prime minister to visit the memorial, and he will be joined by U.S. President Barack Obama. He said that his visit is to honor the victims of the attack on Pearl Harbor and is proof that the former enemies have transcended the, quote, recriminatory impulses that often cast a shadow over post-war relations.
Under the Alliance of Hope, as I call it, I do believe that Japan and the United States can work together to address various challenges, not only in the region, but also globally.
Since the end of the Second World War, the two foes have built a powerful alliance that both sides say has grown stronger during President Barack Obama's tenure. 6 months ago, Obama became the first sitting U.S. president to visit Hiroshima, one of two Japanese cities on which the United States dropped atomic bombs in August 1945.
Ole Tangen Jr. with that report. Let's now head to the Democratic Republic of Congo's town of Beni, that is located in the volatile region of the east of the country, where the situation remains precarious after Christmas attacks left at least 30 people dead. In the last 2 years, the town of Beni has been hit by massacres, killing hundreds, many of whom were hacked to death. Although Congolese officials have blamed the attacks on the ADF, several expert reports have suggested that other groups, including elements within the Congolese army, took part in some killings. Before we came on air, I spoke to Pastor Noah Kiota, a resident of Beni town, and he started off by describing to me the situation at the moment.
The situation after these killings is not good. The situation is very bad. People are fearing of what can come in next time.
And who could be behind these killings?
Really, we are not understanding, and always that question is coming in. What we know and what we follow is that we have these rebels from Uganda, ADF, NALU, who are killing people in the area. But we are doubting of this kind of rebels operation, because for many years, these rebels were living in the area, but they were not killing people in such a way as we are living it now. So everybody is not understanding who really is killing people in the area.
Has the government tried to come to your rescue? I mean, like in terms of providing security in such a way that these killings shouldn't continue to happen?
Yes, the government is there. We have our operations, but the situation is still the same.
Since you say the problem is entirely political, if you are to meet with your politicians, what would you tell them? If you are to meet them face to face, what message would you give them?
No, if I meet this politician, I have to tell them that we need peace. The important message for these people is that we need peace, and they have no right to separate people and to create conflict. We need people as we were living many years ago, because peace is the foundation of everything. If there is peace, people will work and benefit of their work. But with the conflicts, people are coming poor. No people will go to school. No people will work. But we will pray for peace, only peace, between all the tribes in this area.
Pastor Noah Kiota, a resident of Beni town in Eastern DRC.
And we are back with more of your opinions on the stories we run. Elovich Henry says, hello, DW. This is the same city Nigerian government claimed to have taken over from Boko Haram. Do tell us what is going on in your region. We'll monitor and get some more comments. But first, Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. What are the people saying on Pearl Harbor?
We have Dodeke Anthony, who says it's definitely too late for Japan honoring the whole victims of Pearl Harbor back into World War II.
I'm afraid, Wanjiku, we have to leave it at that. Anyway, keep on those comments. Send them, and we will read them whenever we can, whether on our Facebook page or right here on air. In case you've just tuned in, this is DW's Africa Link program, straight from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, a startup project in Kenya that is offering young innovators with entrepreneurial skills.
Started Nyla because we noticed that young people were working in isolation. So we decided to have a place where they could come and work together, co-create, collaborate, find resources that were not available to them as individuals.
But first to Ghana, where the Food and Drugs Authority in the Northern Region have mounted market surveillance to get rid of expired and substandard products. Usually many consumable products are either expired or about to expire, but are still on market shelves. Many consumers have a tendency of buying goods without checking their expiry dates. Already, unconfirmed rumors making rounds that there's plastic rice on the market, which has scared many consumers, especially that many hope to hold end-of-year parties with lots of food and drinks. From Northern Ghana, Maxwell Souk reports.
It is a busy, bustling day at the Tamale Central Market. Buyers rub shoulders with one another to grab their items from market shelves before the market closes. But many of these buyers just pack the items without checking if they are safe for consumption or not. Charlotte Yambil is in the market today buying the ingredients. However, she didn't check the expiry dates.
In the market, it's always too busy, so sometimes you don't have time to check. You get home, sometimes when you're coming to use it, you check the date before using it.
Namame, tin tomatoes, 25.
Rebecca, another resident in Tamale, has just bought the tin tomatoes, canned fish, and Maggi. But she didn't bother checking if the items has expired.
No, I have not checked it. It doesn't really matter. When I get to the house, I will check it. And once there's a problem with it, I'll return it back to the shop.
Ghana's Public Health Act makes it punishable to keep unwholesome products in the market. The Food and Drug Authority says there is a perceived lack of interest among Ghanaians to check product specifications, especially expiry dates of consumable items, before buying them. Martin Kusi is head of the Food and Drug Authority in Northern Region.
Normally, Ghanaians are not fan of checking expiry dates before buying. So almost every now and then, we go around through supermarkets, food joints, marketplaces to make sure that products which are on the market are of good quality.
To weed out unwholesome products in the market shelves, the Food and Drugs Authority has mounted a surveillance and has since seized products from the market.
Yes, so far we've seized a lot of products. Biscuits, dented products, expired canned products. We had about 2 pickups fully loaded with these expired, unwholesome, dented, bloated, rusty products, which are in our warehouse, due for destruction.
Rice is a major staple for majority of Ghanaians. However, there are speculations that plastic rice is on the Ghanaian market. This has caused a panic, especially among those that fancy perfumed rice. Georgina Kanlu, a housewife, told me she has quit eating most of the imported rice.
Because of that, I've stopped taking most of the polished rice. Most of the foreign rice, I've stopped taking them.
Haja Agnes imports rice from the Vietnam, Thailand and China. She told me the demand has declined due to the rumor of plastic rice existence on the market.
It's really bad because sales have dropped. People are not patronizing the perfume rice, the rice that comes from Thailand and China.
The Ghanaian market is currently being flooded with cheap varieties of perfumed rice. But the FDA, Martin Kusi, says they have not confirmed any plastic rice existence in the market yet.
As we speak now, there has not been any report of this plastic rice in the Ghanaian system as we speak now.
The FDA issued a press statement denying the claims a fortnight ago, but following a BBC report that the Nigerian authority impounded a truckload of rice suspected to be plastic rice, the scare became deep among Ghanaians and is unlikely to go down anytime soon.
Maxwell Souk reporting from Northern Ghana.
Africa on the move.
For Africa on the Move segment this week, we bring you the story of Nairobi Incubation Lab, or NILAB, a Kenyan startup incubation project located in the capital, Nairobi, that started in 2010. It offers an entrepreneurship program which focuses on growing innovative technology-driven ideas that are likely to have a large social and economic impact. Enthusiastic developers from Kenya's budding tech community have refined their innovations in Nilab, creating useful products for everyday life. This report by Maine Macharia is now presented by Eunice Wanjiru.
Steve Wally is a happy man. He has found an affordable apartment in Nairobi. And not only that, he was able to save money by cutting out the middleman, the real estate agent. All this thanks to an app called Kija Hunt. Joshua Mutua invented it after some bad personal experiences.
We realized there should be a better way to find, to be able to find houses, especially for the low and middle income earning segment. So we decided to make this process more transparent.
Joshua's app was developed at Nilab, a Kenyan startup incubator that was founded in 2010 by Sam Gishuru. He recognized a need to mentor techies with good ideas but few resources.
We started Nilab because we noticed that young people were working in isolation. So we decided to have a place where they could come and work together, co-create, collaborate, find resources that were not available to them as individuals.
In a six-month program, Nilab helps people turn an idea into a finished product. The initial focus is on how to make it work technologically. Then the team works on how to market and sell the product efficiently. Once it's on the market, Nilab gets a 10% share of the profit.
One of the challenges we are facing is capital to expand. Our plan is to expand to other towns such as Mombasa, Kisumu, Eldoret. We need around $5,000 for that, but we have not been able to raise that yet.
These days, Kenyans rely on smartphones at work and at home. At least 30 out of 43 million Kenyans use them. From banking to dating to shopping, apps have huge business potential. But what good is a gold mine if you don't know how to access it?
Startup founders do not really look at their businesses. Most of us just write really, really good code, but we are not able to monetize. We think that the best code wins, or that kind of a thing.
But good code is not all it takes. The Kenyan government is helping with $1.6 million towards the development of 30 tech incubation projects by 2016. In addition to mentorship and assistance, participating startups receive funding equivalent to $3,288 and above. Every little bit helps.
It has been access to funding. For instance, RabbitIQ here, their solution is brilliant. If this was in the US, probably it would be so easy to raise funding. But in Kenya right now, people would rather invest in real estate rather than invest in startups.
Still, nothing can stop a good idea. Nilab sees itself as spearheading the tech movement by accelerating startups. Eventually, money will come to where the market is.
A report by Maina Macharia.
Focus Europe.
In the Russian capital, Moscow, there is a new kind of protest going on. It's not your usual protests that draw big crowds with angry youth shouting slogans demanding their rights. In Russia, young people rarely take the streets because of strict protest laws in the country. But one group of young activists is bucking the trend. They've come up with a new way of protesting on and offline. So Emily Shawin has details on this way of protesting on and offline.
This is what Sasha Alexeyeva's protest sounds like. She's part of Tihi Piket, the silent protest movement. Nearly every day since April, the 20-year-old student has been riding the Moscow metro with political and social messages stuck to her blue satchel. She takes the bag and her message with her everywhere she goes.
I feel strange without a poster. I've gotten used to people looking at me, reading my posters and reacting.
Today's poster reads, "Have your blood analyzed and register as a bone marrow donor." Others have been more controversial. "If I hug my boyfriend on the metro, is that heterosexual propaganda?" A reference to Russian laws that deem so-called homosexual propaganda illegal. Another one read, "Women are still oppressed. I want to be a full member of society, not a decoration." Today, the reactions were just as subtle as Sasha's protest itself. The activist says two people thanked her as they got off the metro, and two girls took a picture of her. Sasha designs a new poster every week. She's one of around 100 activists, most of them young women, who have taken part. The activists try not to hold their posters up the way traditional protesters do. They try to look accessible rather than what they see as aggressive. The hope is that people will ask about the posters and that there will be some sort of public discussion, what they call a communication.
Задача создания гражданского общества осознанного.
Our goal is to form a politically aware civil society. The problem in Russia is that everyone is waiting for some kind of messiah, an awesome person who will lead us all to revolution. But actually, that's not how it works. You need a lot of people, normal people, not heroes, who start to see themselves as political subjects and change something.
Тихий пикет is trying to create just that. It's a combination of online and offline activism. People who take part write about their experience with each poster on social media, on Facebook and the Russian equivalent ВКонтакте, using the hashtag Тихий пикет. Since anti-government demonstrations a few years ago, protest laws have gotten tougher. All demonstrations now have to be approved in advance. The threat of a jail sentence of up to 5 years or a huge fine hangs over any protest. Even single-person protests, which don't have to be officially approved, have landed activists in prison. In Russia today, even Тихий пикет could be dangerous.
Emily Shawin in Moscow.
We also have your opinions on DR Congo following the Christmas attack that left at least 35 people dead.
Yeah, we've just been hearing from a resident of Beni town telling us about the security situation there that remains dire. What are people saying, Wanjiko?
Beverly Price asks, where is the UN? The UN is missing in non-action. We also have a comment from Juma Suleiman who says, we have to stop killing ourselves. Ghulam Zahir adds and says, I just left Congo a few days ago and the people said if President Kabila did not order for new elections, there would be violence.
Yeah, I mean, recent talks, you know, allowed President Kabila to another year until 2017. But again, that means that he won't stand again for the third term. That was shortly before Christmas. Now, what are people saying, you know?
We have Blessed Martin who asks, how many people does Kabila want to see dead? It's time for him to respect the will of the people. Istvan says, this is surely sad and I wish them peace. For sure, foreign intervention on either side will only worsen the conflict. And we also have Luca Stefano who says, condolences to the Congolese who lost their loved ones.
The Congo subject is still a pertinent issue since last week when we covered it from the start of the talks. And I'm sure guys out there will keep on, you know, sending their comments. Anyway, away from, you know, the situation in the DRC, what else do you have for our listeners?
We also have on Twitter, Forza Uganda, which is Portuguese for Force Uganda, is trending after a boat accident on Christmas Day killed at least 30 people.
The accident was really very unfortunate, especially that it involved a football team and their fans going to enjoy the day with a football match.
Indeed. And Leticia says, pray for Uganda. Blue Clean tweets and says, I want to see the media talking about what happened in Uganda.
Just like me. Remember, this is one of the many stories that you can also find on our Facebook page, Wanjiku, isn't it?
Certainly. And Stella also adds, it's devastating to hear about Forza Uganda. Bello Adenali says, hats out to the families of the victims. A football fanatic at the Cruz team says, it's sad how most of the football world are ignoring or don't care about what has happened to Uganda.
But I think partly it's because there were no Christmas matches. I'm sure maybe they would have honored, you know, the dead with a minute of silence.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this is some of what we have on this story. But don't forget to contribute on these stories and more on our Facebook page.
And yes, and of course, if something is happening in your region, write to us on Facebook and let us know. Thanks indeed, Wanjiku. We'll have to leave it at that. But as always, for more news on the continent, visit dw.com/Africa.
Or follow us on DW Africa Facebook page.
And as usual, thanks for keeping us company. Until tomorrow, same time, take care. And goodbye.